Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Well, good morning, everybody. Today's Monday. It's July 22. We're hoping to hear from John Bailey from the White Plains Citizenet Reporter. And I noticed when I was looking at the subject matter that I had actually posted yesterday, even though it was one of the most compelling issues of all, White Plains' June sales had increased to over $5 million just for the month of July. And this is like unbelievable. And it's the only time, actually, there were two previous $5 million Junes, one in, three, so 2000, 2014, and now this year in 2019. So if John calls, we'll be able to find out why this took place, which will be very interesting. Oh, I see he's on. So let me just look, see if we can pull him in. Good morning, John. Good to have you on today.
Good morning. Good morning from White Plains, New York, USA.
John, I was looking at my website, and I realized that the most compelling issue of all, which struck me as like, whoa, is the $5 million sales tax revenue, third time in history earned in White Plains,
$5 million plus in June, right.
So what's fascinating is there any basis for knowing what caused this? Because this is like 400,000 more. Last month.
Right. I mean, last month we had under 4 million. So, boom,
right.
We had 5 million in June. I mean, my God, I didn't see people staggering out of restaurants throughout the night in White Plains all through June. I mean, what is the answer? So, I have written the Department of Sales, Department of Taxation and Finance, which releases these figures to me, asking if there's any one-time catch-up payment that White Plains got, because usually White Plains ain't going to tell me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because
so
we're
awaiting that answer.
Yeah, we are, because I think it's always better to get it from the people who release it than the people who, if it was a one-time only payment, they're not going to tell me.
Well, I hear you.
So I mean, that's the way they are. That's the way they are. I mean, if I was heading towards another year of decline in our sales tax and I got that much money, I would put out, I would hold a press conference and do what Trump does. White Plains is on the way back. You know, look out, New Row, you know? But no, nothing like that. I mean, these people are public relations dead over there in White Plains.
Well, that's very true. Well, I don't know. You might be getting ahead of us, you know, because we thought that Yonkers was at the top of the heap of that disaster, but maybe not. You know, I mean, numbers.
Is Mike Spano running for governor next time out?
Oh, give me a break, please. I mean,
it's not without the realm of possibility.
Well, you know, I really don't think that anybody knows him or willing to vote for somebody they don't know. Maybe that's all they're good for. Yonkers is good for. PR that means absolutely nothing and is based on crap. But that's okay. We'll just leave it the way it is, and we'll see what happens.
Well, that's what public relations is. That's what public relations is. And
people forget that.
Make no mistake. I mean, public relations. I mean, many people that go into public relations come from the journalism industry, and I can't think of something I would much rather not do, because if you originally go into journalism and you're a reporter, you want to report the truth. You want to improve society. Public relations doesn't do that.
Absolutely not. It just skews the facts and maligns it in every way possible distorts. That's a better word. It's total
distortion. The facts. I mean, we have the master of public relations running the country now. You see what he's doing. He takes absolute untruths, horrible statements, and spins them as acceptable.
You know what, John? I don't disagree with you. I do actually agree with you. But where I find the failure is not because he does that. That's his own personal failure. But the fact that nobody on the other side comes up with a credible response that actually pinpoints the issues and goes beyond like maybe a sentence or two in response to it and points out what it is and actually validates for people
absolutely
once and for all how and why it is the way it is. If you want to call the man a racist, then show when he was last a racist. Show it. Go over it over and over and over again. But they don't do that. They just say, oh, he's a racist. That's not good enough. And then you want to know the truth. I also still believe that at the same time, the people that he was, he wanted them to go back to wherever they came from, which is racist in tone and in demeanor anyway. But there were other ways for him to express it. And the point is, they're not always right either. So, you know, there is a limit to how much we should tolerate. But we tolerate too much, and we tolerate abusive language, we tolerate racism, we tolerate so much, but we don't seem to tolerate what's really good for us. And that we don't
know. And look what happened. Look what happened last week on the local level. Remember the SEIU 32BJ union went for the IDA hearing and complained about them granting possibly granting tax relief to the company in White Plains who's building building the Hamilton Green development, which is the redevelopment of the White Plains Mall on Hamilton Avenue. And they pointed out that they have not identified their full partners and they're applying for these tax breaks and they're trying to have open shop. And a public relations firm, the developer themselves put out a public relations firm saying, well, we are working out the environmental issues and we will be labor friendly, and nobody questions it.
Well, you know why? Because the reason nobody questions it is because most people aren't able to question it. They don't really know what is going on. But, you know, that's the position that should be taken by the administration. And they should explain what is still missing and what. But, you see, they can't explain why they gave it an okay to move ahead.
Well,
they
haven't okayed it yet.
Don't understand.
Haven't okayed it.
Exactly. But they could also point out where it is that these people are. And they should explain it because they're talking about property in White Plains. But they don't seem to care.
Exactly.
So what do they
do? Certainly not White Plains. I mean, my God, when's the last time White Plains actually challenged the developer or something?
Well, you know, I don't want to admonish White Plains as the only one. They're not the outlier. Yeah. The point is it happens all over.
No,
so
they're not.
It's really disgusting. And the public is kept in the dark. And you know what's best, John?
True.
When you report it the way it is, we're the ones that get the pushback. We're the ones that are coming up with the fake news. We're the ones that are disrespectful. We're the ones that undermine economic development. Yeah,
holding
right.
Westchester back. Holding Westchester and White Plains back. Putting out bad reputations for White Plains. White Plains makes its own bad reputation. Let's put it that way. Particularly among the residents.
Absolutely. That's what people don't even realize, but we still haven't seen a revolution and a pushback by the public. The public is aware of what's going on. But you know what? The fact that the media maligns the fact, distorts the facts, allows for these fake news items to come out there is really a detriment to our business. And you know what? Maybe that's the reason that companies like Lohud are going down the tubes. They're looking for another buyout in the next couple of weeks. So we'll see where that goes.
Really? Somebody is going to take them over?
Oh, yeah. Wow. Supposedly there's another buyer supposedly going to buy it. It's a company called SoftBank. They're a fund managing company, one of the biggest in the world. And the owner, I think his last name is Sun, S-O-N. He's a billionaire, and he's thinking of investing and buying out parts of Trunk. That's the name of the company that owns the Gannett chain. But the Gannett in the last quarter lost over $11 million. $11 million in the last quarter. I mean, this is outrageous. No wonder they don't cover the news. They don't have the people to cover the news. You know, and then
they only made an 11 million handle.
No, they made an $11 million deficit. Deficit.
Oh my God! So they're
They're underwater for a quarter.
Well, and why is that?
Because
they've got that. Why is that? Because they don't cover the big stories. I just
don't
understand
the news. How many articles about Yonkers? We're lucky if we see one a week. In Mount
and it's
White
usually
Plains,
super
maybe
positive.
One or, absolutely. And then the same thing in New Rochelle, if they even bother to cover it. The only place that they're in right now is Mount Vernon because they think, oh, it's going to be salacious and it's unusual. Is that the only reason they're in White Plains, in Mount Vernon?
No,
because that's the only time they came in.
If I were covering Mount Vernon, I would not cover it. It's the same old story.
Yep, it is.
And it doesn't affect anybody except who lives in Mount Vernon.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But
it's
easy
sensationalism story.
That's exactly
but
what they're
that's
going
That's my
for.
Personal opinion. That's just my personal opinion. And what is
well,
more important...
I agree with you. I agree with you. It's sensationalism,
right.
And that's what they're looking for.
But here's the thing. We, in about 45 minutes from now, the county executive down at Garden Street in New Rochelle is having a big introduction of the new headquarters that they have agreed to, the county has agreed to lease for like 30 years for something like, I think, $57 million.
Yeah.
And they're going to basically build the building with county money.
But that's for the court, right?
At least. That's right. That's for the court. Now, the big question is, why is it more sensible to have the county build a building rather than not lease another building, for God's sake? They could bring it to White Plains. They could bring it to White Plains, centrally located. I don't understand.
Well, you know
it,
what it is.
What
the reason there? Evidently, there's been a lot of push by New Rochelle to get it centrally located. They claim that the New Rochelle property will be very close to the Mount Vernon people who would need to use it, and so on. But
what about
Yonkers?
It's impossible.
Yonkers is pretty far away from New Rochelle.
Absolutely. In other words, whenever I officiate games and I have to get from, say, Yonkers over to New Rochelle, and I've had to do that a number
forget
of times, forget it. There are no direct roads.
Yeah.
It's an absolutely insane location, and it always has been, and there's no parking over there, and there will be even less when they start building all these buildings. This is
the
an
only,
incredibly bad decision. It should be put in White Plains.
The only thing that I think about in that particular court is that nobody from Yonkers is required to go to that particular court. But I'm not exactly sure.
Well, that's only circumstance.
That courthouse.
Yeah.
That might
all
be
right.
Just you're right.
I know,
could be just circumstance.
The
but
entire
you know
west side of the county can't get to New Rochelle easily. It's in the southeast corner of the county.
It is.
Three
exactly
quarters
is.
Of the county.
That's a real
it totally
problem.
Ignores geography. And,
absolutely.
Of course, that will be. But anyway, I'm just really wondering why we're dumping all that money on building a totally new court building down there.
I know.
I really do
well,
not
listen,
understand.
Listen, John, we have more to cover. So we went off track. I also wanted to go over this whole issue about the banning, this Westchester County Board of Legislators banning non-degradable plastic containers and cups, and how is that going to impact, or do we really yet know how that will impact businesses and consumers alike and the environment?
Well, I believe that this is something that was not really thoroughly thought about by the legislature when they did this, because I was talking to a restaurateur who runs a medium-sized restaurant in the county, and he said this is a disaster from a cost standpoint. He says you can get biodegradable plastic cups, but not made of plastic.
Uh-huh.
They're made of cornmeal. And so they're they cost 40% more. It really means that he feels that the restaurateurs who are forced to do this, the fast food places, the delis, the street corner guys, they are going to raise prices.
Absolutely.
They're going to raise prices, and the consumer will pay for it. This is another one of those feel-good legislations that they did not think about. Now, we do not know exactly when it will go into effect. I don't believe the county executive signed it. But, I mean, if he can tell me that, where was the outcry? Where were the hearings on this law? And the Restaurant Association in Westchester just cashed in. They did not. They didn't protest it at all, I was told.
No,
Restaurant Owners Association. No. So therefore, it's not going to get. I mean, this is what the legislature does not seem to use their heads. They don't look at all sides except when they're the particular constituency. I mean.
Well, you know, I guess the thing is we still have to also respect the fact that plastics are really a curse on the environment all over the place. There are ramifications about that.
I agree. I'm just saying.
But then they should just tell us. First of all, why shouldn't we know what the cost factor is? That's a crucial part of this discussion. So we should know what we're paying for if we're going to pay for it. And we should understand what it is, not to find out that later, if you got to pick up a Chinese meal, it's going to cost you 50 cents extra for the dish or whatever.
I bet you it costs 50, a lot more than that. I think you're looking
I'm sure
at
it will.
Sharp
I'm
price
sure
increases.
Will.
Yes.
Well, that's what
they're
we need
gone
to hear.
As the Brett's hot dog.
Exactly. That's what we need to hear. Well, want to ask you about something else.
Yeah. Go ahead.
One thing about mental health, there's evidently a new website put together.
Yeah, a bunch of good news.
That is very interesting news. This is all,
and this,
I want people to know, before we continue, John, this is all written up in your website on the White Plains Citizen at reporter.com website.
Well, no, actually, they can see video of it on White Plains Week. White Plains Week video. Will have that story in it, and you'll see George Latimer explain it, and also the website demonstrate it in real time, and you'll get the website. But what the website does, it contains all the mental health providing organizations in one place. And in very explicit fashion, hours, and you can pick and choose what organizations might best suit your interest as far as help in mental health issues. It is a great idea, and it is executed. It works right now, and it works really good. It is one of the really good things that the Latimer administration has done, but it was started in the Astorino administration, and it has taken them, you know, this time to perfect it. But it's there now, and it's
it's dcmhservices.westchestergov.com. So DC, D like David, C like Charlie, M like Mother, H Hotel. DCMH Services, www.westchestergov.com. So, and you can find it on WPCNR.com if you want to learn more and connect to the video, to the show, and just the write-up. Also,
yeah, it's
you
on YouTube, too.
That, yes. And you pointed out that Westchester County is committing to repair the carousel and the Derby race ride at Rye Playland. Why are they doing this? I mean, are we going to rebuild that whole thing from scratch and resuscitate it? Is that it? What is the cost of all of this?
Say approximately $120 million to resuscitate the entire park. Because that's what they were. Well, we should have thought of that because before they picked this fight with Standard Amusements. But I thought that the big issue here is how is Playland doing? Now, in the middle of June, they said they were well ahead of even 2017's pace. But it's been 5 weeks since June the 9th those figures came out. And I have asked for the figures. What are the up-to-date figures? Are we keeping pace? They don't release them. So that tells you they're not keeping pace. Right? I mean, when they don't give you something which is asked for nicely and is rational, that means they don't like what the results say. I mean,
absolutely. Well, evidently we're going to throw more money into it, and I think even Standard Amusement wasn't the answer. We probably should have raised the whole thing to the ground and built homes there, and they would have a lot of new people that would have wanted to come into Westchester County. And
it would have been
a
development
village.
Bonanza. It would have been a development bonanza. But be that as it may, you have the city of Rye to blame for that.
Well, that's true. Well, before we go into that, let's talk about something that's really very exciting in White Plains, and that's your public school district. Superintendent Joseph Ricca has been hired for another 5-year term. So this man must be like walking on water. How did this happen? What did he do that was different from before?
Well, number one, he's a young man. I believe he's in his early 50s, but he actually looks younger than that. And he has total experience. He was a teacher. And he was a principal, and then he was a superintendent over in, the Elmsford district and really improved that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they picked him up, and he has Westchester County's dream superintendent's job. Everybody wants to be the superintendent of schools of White Plains because nobody ever complains about the taxes, the school taxes. They have a wonderful school district, and the people appreciate that, and the Board of Education runs itself responsibly.
Well, what is, people do realize at the end of the day that the way education departments go is the way a city goes. So if you have a good solid Board of Education and school system, that keeps your real estate values up, and people move there, and people invest in cities like that. So that's very, very important. It underpins the entire community in a good way.
Well, it has kept White Plains alive. As a go-to place because the real estate taxes in White Plains are low compared to the rest of the county. I think they're the lowest in the county. I don't know if that's for sure. I never looked at them all. But they're affordable. They make White Plains houses affordable. And this is really important. Now, what did the new superintendent do? Number one, he has overhauled the security in the White Plains schools terrifically ahead of an incident, okay? In other words, he has made them stronger now, and I never report them because security is not security if everybody knows what your security is.
Right.
Right. Something
that's
that I think.
That's exceptional.
Really. And what that has done is really bolstered people's confidence in that issue. And he also negotiated a teacher's contract with approximately 1.5% for each year, which is quite prudent, well under inflation, and the teachers were really happy with it. So therefore, he did two things in 2 years that usually take 2 to 3 years.
That's terrific.
So, yeah.
Well, that's
and,
leadership.
That's leadership. He's a very nice person. He always signs his letters respectfully. And that is such a great sign-off. In fact, I recommend people use that type of a sign-off. Sincerely doesn't actually cut it anymore because nobody is sincere,
no.
Right? No. So
well, that's
respectfully is good. It's an excellent word, I think. But he is highly communicative, and people really respond to that. And that is why I believe – and the school district, of course – decided they would definitely rehire him for 5 years. Now, that's the longest contract, okay, that I can ever remember a superintendent in the 20 years I've been covering the school district awarded. Even Mr. Connors, even Mr. Connors was only renewed for 3 years. And he was well-liked because he once again was very personable and had a very soothing effect. Whereas Dr. Ricca addresses problems, meets them head on, and when he can't do something, he tells you.
Well, you know, that's very interesting because he's got a personality that's very old-fashioned, or the type of, you know, demeanor that we expected from people our age, because he's younger. And so we grew up with those sort of things. We did sign our letters respectfully. You know, we did come up with other ideas. Sincerely didn't quite cut it then either, even though a lot of people used it. So and the fact that he is communicative is very, very important. I think it's
he's
more
a gentleman.
Important than almost anything else.
He's a gentleman, and he returns phone calls.
Wow. We don't have anybody like that. Well, they're so rare to find.
No.
Oh, my God.
It's amazing how – I mean, look, I mean, legislators don't return phone calls.
No, they don't.
State senators don't return phone calls. Assemblymen usually don't. Buchwald is sort of the exception of that. He does return calls, but –
Mm-hmm.
And there are always those exceptions. But another thing that Ricca did was that he created a capital fund so to avoid bonding for future repairs to our 9 schools. That is, and they approved that.
That's huge.
Yes. Yes. $10 million a year we're going to attempt to build up.
Wow.
Over,
fantastic.
Right, so.
Well, we're only down to like the last minute. Anything else that you wanted to bring forward?
Well, remember last week, Mary Ellen Elia, the Commissioner of Education, resigned. And it's fortunate that White Plains signed Mr. Ricca for a 5-year contract before she did that because they'd make him Commissioner of Education.
Wow.
And that is somewhat a humorous thing on my part, but this throws education in New York State into chaos. We don't know where academics are headed with the Common Core. We don't know whether the testing is even working. The results haven't been put out. They should be coming out within 2 to 3 weeks, usually, but we'll see.
Well, there's a lot to wait for.
Well, yes, that's why the education department is in huge trouble.
Yeah,
rudderless
well,
right
John,
now. The regents were apparently unhappy with her.
Absolutely. Well, John, it's been an absolute pleasure. You always start off the Mondays on a good note. Even when it's not so good, the point is that you and I always seem to have a lot of fun, which is great. And so have a great week. I can't wait till next week. There's always something happening.
Yeah, it's quiet, too quiet.
Well, I think there's too much going on. Anyway, better get
That's
going.
Right.
All the best, John. Thank you so much.
So long for now.
Bye. Well, let's welcome our next guest, one and only. I can't even believe that we're going to be speaking to Mike Adamlin right now. So let me see if I can pull him in. Oh, we got him in already. So good morning, Michael. How are you?
Hello there, Hezzy. How are you today?
I'm okay. There's so much been going on over the weekend. You know, it's getting a little crazy. The president really has goaded a lot of racist talk or a lot of pushback because the way he's been expressing himself, it seems that it's very racist. Does he have any basis for saying what he is saying, or is it just a way of manipulating the story to lash out at these four women?
You can't tell four newly elected women, three of whom are born in the United States, the other one who is naturalized, all of them citizens, to go anywhere at any time because they're criticizing your policies. Trump's whole life has been critical of the United States, calling Obama the most ignorant president we've ever had, saying that our leaders didn't know what they were doing. He's done that for 25, 35 years. So who is he to tell them to go anywhere? They're United States citizens. They represent constituencies. They've all been duly elected to the United States Congress. Here's the bottom line. The bottom line is, just like every authoritarian who has ever come along, from Hitler to Mussolini to Putin, if you attack them and their policies, they accuse you of attacking the nation. And they put themselves as a moral equivalent of, in Trump's case, the United States. So what he says is purely a reaction of an authoritarian to legitimate criticisms by members of the Congress that get paid to do exactly that.
So I guess the whole fight now between the president and these four women, as well as people who support them, and there are some that support the president. But is this racism? Is it a religious fight? Is it a policy fight? What is it? What is it that we're seeing?
No.
It's not.
It has nothing to do with policy. Because if it was a policy fight, Trump would counter talk about why they're wrong on their policy. Instead, what he does is cast them as not entitled to be in the United States, which is totally based on what they look like. They're brown and black, and he is trying to make them the face of the Democratic Party. He is trying to gin up his 35% base based on racism, because he knows he can't talk about anything else, because every promise he made, he hasn't kept.
And is this winning? Is this winning people who have been in the Republican camp that supported him? Because not everybody Republican supported him. But the point is, those people that support Trump, is that winning the way for him? Or we don't know
with
yet?
Well, obviously you don't know among the entire electorate because we haven't had an election.
No.
But you know that.
Right.
You know that Republicans have been making excuses for why what he's saying isn't racist. But Republicans who are objective, like Justin Amash, who left the Republican Party recently,
right.
Bill Kristol, George Will, Joe Scarborough,
yeah.
and on and on and on, they've criticized him for exactly what his words are. It's racism and it's xenophobic. And even though his base follows him along, that is not sufficient to win a general election.
Mm-hmm. So where do we go from here, or is this what we should be expecting, then the attitude from the president will continue on this vein all the way through the general election? Is this
what you can expect to hear?
Wow.
That's correct. You can expect him to hear. Now, here's his problem. He was asked the other day why he didn't try to stop that chant of send her back.
Right.
And he tried to argue that he did. If you looked at the tape, he waited 13 seconds until it died down. So he didn't try to stop anything. So what happens at the next rally if they chant the same thing?
Uh-huh.
He's now put in a position that he knows what's coming, okay? And he can either put his hands up and shush the crowd, or he can let them go on. And that's the box he's put himself in.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, is his attitude and the way he expresses himself, is that starting to fail now? Because this particular time is a great deal of pushback against him.
One of the political commentators on Joe Scarborough this morning suggested they take him to Walter Reed Army Medical Hospital for a full psychiatric.
Wow.
And she's a Republican, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
She was communications director for George W. Bush.
Oh, so the president is losing his way, or is he just lost it completely?
He's losing his marbles.
For other reasons. Yeah.
He's losing his marbles. He's losing his ability to rationally think. He's being overcome. I think he's totally overcome and over his head in the job. He's got more vacant positions throughout government than any other president has ever had by far. He has 9 acting cabinet members. He doesn't have a Secretary of Defense. Come on, you can't run a government like the United States, which is the greatest military power in the history of the world, with nobody there.
Yeah. Yeah, you need people to bring it about. That's all. And you need people with expertise to challenge. Yeah.
You need people with expertise in each department to formulate how that department is going to proceed and solve the problems that are tasked to that particular department. Homeland Security doesn't have anybody now. How are they supposed to deal with the border? Stephen Miller should be the last person to be designing what happens on the border. He's a rabid racist, anti-immigration guy who writes all of Trump's speeches because Trump can't put a sentence together. Or 2 sentences together.
Yeah.
Without saying I strongly did this, or I strongly said that, or we strongly oppose. So when strongly is the only word he can say.
Right. Yeah, it's become really boring actually listening to him. Yeah, he's repetitive, the same type of terminology all the time. So I wonder if any of those words mean very much. Well, I wanted to ask you about some other issues, unless you had another thought about this particular concern, or if we could move on to the Nadler and the Chris Wallace interview.
Yeah.
Well, so Fox News reported Chris Wallace, he spoke to the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Gerald Nadler, who really laced into this whole concept that Attorney General Barr claimed that there was no collusion and no this and no that. Everything that was in the Mueller report was denied by Barr. And he said that's absolutely false and not true. And That's
correct.
When are we going to hear exactly what Nadler needs to say in order
Wednesday.
To be able to see Wednesday? So that's
yep.
when it's going to begin. And
well, that's
people
when
haven't
testify,
read,
isn't it?
Right, right. So people haven't read all 448 pages of the report. Most people haven't. I was listening to WNYC, a local radio. They have an AM and FM station in New York, and they're reading the report. They go in, they read a certain amount every day, which is really,
yeah,
really
but,
good because a lot of people don't read it.
But WNYC is not relevant to people that live in Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin.
Absolutely.
It's those people.
You're right.
It's those people that have not read the report that are being misled by Fox News and right-wing opinion
mm-hmm.
blog sites like Breitbart and Drudge. They're being misled into believing that somehow the original counterintelligence investigation started by the FBI as a result of George Papadopoulos spouting off when he was drunk to an Australian diplomat about how the Russians
mm.
wanted to help Trump get elected was not legitimate, but it was legitimate, and it would have been malfeasance for the FBI not to have begun that investigation, which Barr alluded to as spying, but it was not spying
yeah.
in the traditional sense. It was kicked off by the fact that there were numerous contacts between Trump's campaign and Russia throughout the campaign. It started with Carter Page, who was under investigation 3 years before because he was viewed as a Russian asset. And Papadopoulos'
mm.
information was rightly turned over to the FBI by the Australian diplomat, and they absolutely had an obligation to start that counterintelligence investigation. If you read the Mueller report,
mm-hmm.
there were over 140 contacts between the Russian, the campaign and the Russians. Paul Manafort gave Konstantin Kalimnik 70
yeah.
pages
mm-hmm.
of internal polling that was used by the GRU and the IRA to micro-target voters in the swing states with 180 million social media posts designed to defeat Hillary Clinton, along with
yeah.
hacking the DNC emails and giving them to WikiLeaks to release immediately before the election was over. This was a coordinated campaign by people close to Donald Trump to welcome, gladly welcome, to accept, and to solicit and facilitate the Russian interference. And that is in the Mueller report. Now, he said it wasn't conspiracy. I disagree. Because the
mm-hmm.
Federal Election Commission guidelines on illegal campaign contributions from foreign entities requires only coordination to be criminal. It doesn't require conspiracy and what the usual law of conspiracy requires, which is an agreement between two or more people with one of those persons taking a step toward achieving the ultimate goal. It only requires the FEC violation to be a felony. It only requires cooperation and coordination to achieve the result, which is exactly what happened. And then Trump, in 10 different instances, tried to obstruct that investigation because he knows that he was elected by Russia, and he understands that if the American people believe that, his presidency is illegitimate.
Well, we should tell people we're speaking to Michael Edelman and political analyst. So I want to go back to, in a sense, based on what we just talked about now with the Mueller report, and going back to the president allowing the chanting of, send them back. We also have, I remember, and I hope I'm right, didn't we say only a couple of weeks ago that the Democrats weren't going to go forward to impeach the president? And then now all of a
yeah.
sudden We didn't say that?
We did say that, but they're not going forward to impeach the president. They're waiting for Mueller to testify.
Okay, well that, so they said they weren't going to impeach a couple of weeks ago, but now it may hinge on exactly the Mueller report, because
Mueller testimony might change the feelings. But it's you know what, impeachment is a politically
right
bad move because of the United States Senate. There's no way the Republicans in the Senate are going to vote for impeachment. So the only thing the Democrats need to do, and the most important thing, is to let the American people know what's in the Mueller report, because they don't know. They haven't read it.
Right.
They relied on a summary from Bill Barr. They relied on Sean Hannity. They relied on Jeanine Pirro. They relied on Fox News. They didn't rely on the words in the report. And so people don't like to read. And they certainly don't like to read a 438-page report with footnotes, but they do like the movies. They like the movies, and they will watch the hearing.
Okay. Well, one thing, it was Representative Al Green, he's from Texas, a Democrat.
Yeah.
He said that the only solution is to put a stop to the president's rhetoric, is that he is impeached, and
that's what he was voted down. You can't impeach a president for being a racist.
No, you're right. It's just that.
But
is sentiment growing to impeach the president?
I think 80 members of the 80 members have signed on to impeach, but that's not enough.
No,
that's
not
even half.
So
it's not even half.
Is it conceivable after the Mueller report, should it be so convincing as so many people believe it is, that that at that point impeachment might be an option? Would the Senate actually consider it? No, it would still not happen.
No.
Okay.
No, and it's not, and it shouldn't happen. You know why it shouldn't happen? Because if he's removed, you're going to have a civil war in the country. Because there are a certain number of people in the country. I don't mean a hot war. I mean a cold war. You're going to have a war where 35-38% of the people don't believe the Mueller report, don't believe what they see and hear, want Trump to be there because he's reflecting their views about race and about social status and about the fact that they are scared to death that the nation is changing demographically, and they want to do anything and everything they can to stop that change in their lifetime. But what you need to do is remove him, and in an election, which is, 17 months away. That's what has to happen.
Right.
There has to be a consensus in the country that Donald Trump is poison, and that he's poisoned the discussion, and that he's a liar, and that his family has been benefiting while he's in office from his presidency, and he needs to be removed. And after he's removed by the voters, then he needs to be charged with whatever criminal actions he's susceptible to, and so do Don Jr., and so does Ivanka, and so does Jared Kushner.
Well, I got to ask you then, supposedly Trump is going to be the stand-up man for the Republican Party, but it looks like he's actually destroying the party. And if that's the case, can America survive with only one party as a ruling party? I mean, it's not like I'm a Republican. I never was a Republican. I'm more in the middle between a Republican and Democrat, and probably a more conservative on many issues. But the question then becomes, how does America function if it only has one party rule?
Well, it's not going to have one party. Let's go back historically. In the 1920s, there were three consecutive Republicans elected. In the
30s and 40s, Roosevelt and the Democrats
right.
controlled the government for 16 years. So what has
yeah.
to happen, it's very possible that the Democrats will run the table and control the House and the Senate and the presidency for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 terms. I don't know. But the Republican
okay.
Party will reconstitute itself in a different form because the Republicans will realize that, let's say, by 2024, all of these old white people that are propping up the racists
mm-hmm.
in the White House will be dead. And if they're
right.
not dead by 2024, they'll be dead by 2030. And the kids
mm-hmm.
and the demographic change that's coming to America will mean that the government will look more diverse, and the Republican Party is going to have to figure out a way to embrace that rather than reject that. And the new crop of
okay.
Republicans that are being groomed for office understand that dynamic. But first you have to get rid of the ones that are there now. Paul Ryan in his book railed
mm-hmm.
against the fact that Trump didn't know a thing about anything, and that
right.
Ryan, although he didn't speak out publicly at the time, which was his obligation, used his resignation as an escape hatch from Donald Trump and Trumpism.
Yeah.
So what you're looking at now is a personality cult. That's what you got. You got a personality
absolutely
cult where facts don't matter. And if you look at Fox News, for example, Chris Wallace was pretty tough, I would say,
yeah.
on Stephen Miller in the interview. I don't know if you saw it.
Right. No,
but
yeah,
Chris Wallace ended the interview by saying that Donald Trump was stoking the flames of racism. And
yeah.
that's very apparent. So Fox News is even making an attempt to separate their real news department with Shepard Smith,
mm-hmm.
Chris Wallace, and
yeah.
Fred Bear from their opinion hosts who are on
mm-hmm.
in prime time. And
right.
And because Fox recognizes that when Republicans are out of power, they're going to lose audience share.
Absolutely, yeah.
And
well,
the Murdoch boys, the kids are smart
yes.
enough to understand
right.
what that means, and they don't want to lose audience share. So half of their news, half of their programming is based on fact. The other half is not.
Absolutely, right. Well, Lachlan is, really a brilliant guy. Well, let's move on to the latest poll. Evidently, Joe Biden, the former vice president, he's still in the lead, but he's losing
mm-hmm.
some of his prowess for some reason. Is there a reason
mm-hmm.
why he might be losing some of the steam? But then again, also
yeah.
Bernie Sanders has lost quite a bit of steam.
Well,
in
Bernie
comparison,
Sanders
and the
been,
women are rising to the
yeah.
top.
Which
that's
is right.
good.
Bernie was hot when he was one-on-one against Hillary because people didn't like the Clintons. Even Democrats
right.
didn't like the Clintons particularly.
Yeah.
But now
uh-huh.
Clinton is not running. So
yeah.
Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris are younger. They're smart, just as smart as he is. They have new
mm-hmm.
ideas. And they are together doing better than Sanders is. Joe
yeah.
Biden got hurt in the debate because he was ambushed by Kamala with regard to
mm-hmm.
federal implementation of busing in the 1970s or 60s, whenever it was.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
even though her position is actually no different than his position, she,
mm-hmm.
she caught him by surprise and he didn't have a quick, good answer. So,
okay.
So Biden represents the central Democratic Party in the heartland. They're
mm-hmm.
center-left. They're not radical. They don't want to give things away. They don't believe in Medicare for all. They don't believe in free college tuition. They don't believe in the Green New Deal. They don't believe in getting rid of
student debt with a magic wand, because that costs, you're talking about trillions and trillions of dollars. Okay? So
yeah.
Biden represents that. He also represents, in most people's minds, the best alternative to beating Donald Trump. Because the one thing that the Democrats cannot afford is having their candidate labeled a socialist.
Yeah.
And Biden's no socialist.
And Bernie is, so he's really now in a tight race for third place.
He self-described himself as a socialist.
Yes.
Can't put somebody like that on the ticket.
No.
You can't put. You have to put somebody who can win the swing states, because it's not a popular vote election. You've got to be able to win Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Florida, North Carolina, and maybe Texas and Arizona and Colorado. So those states are the only states that count.
And what about the people who are in the back end of this? You got Pete Buttigieg from South Bend, and Representative Beto O'Rourke from Texas, and the Development Secretary Julian Castro. He's only at 1%. Okay.
All of the people, they're not going to make the next debate. The debate on, I believe it's CNN in September.
Okay. So Julian Castro and Beto O'Rourke not?
Yeah. No,
okay.
All of the people, the threshold is raised. So you're going to have to get 2% in the polls and 130,000 individual donors. Well, all of these people that are in this now, other than the top tier, are not going to make that debate.
Gotcha. So Buttigieg and O'Rourke and Castro are probably going to not be there.
Well, Buttigieg might be in the debate.
Mike.
I think what he, from my point of view, I don't think he has any realistic expectation of getting the nomination. But I think he believes that if one of the women gets the nomination, they'll put him on as vice president. Then it'll be Harris Buttigieg, or it'll be Warren Buttigieg. That's what he's thinking, I'm sure. He can't possibly believe he's going to be the nominee.
Okay. All right. So that's where it's at. Is it because of his young age, or because he's from South Bend, Indiana?
Well, first of all, he's an inexperienced mayor. Second of all, he's 37 years old with no foreign policy chops of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
And third of all, he's gay. And gay is not going to play in the Midwest for president. It shouldn't be a problem for vice president, but it's not going to play
in the
Midwest.
Okay. All right. So there are all kinds of things you have to consider. I didn't even consider that. I guess
you have me on. That's why you have me, because I get paid the big bucks to consider that.
Absolutely, I realize that. So and I respect that too. So that's where it's at. So. I mean, is there something that we should be concerned about? Just, I guess, hopefully people will tune in on Wednesday to start to hear the Mueller report and to hear Mueller's testimony.
And you know what? If they're too busy to tune in because they're working and they can't watch
YouTube.
The entire 5 hours, they're going to see snippets replayed on the news. And that's what we really need. So the news organizations will distill that 5 hours down to the most interesting and most revealing portions of Bob Mueller's testimony. And that's
unbelievable.
What you'll see at night, and that's what you'll see Sunday on the Sunday shows. And people will eventually get to see it up close and personal, which is what it's going to take to shift opinion in the country away from Donald Trump's 44%. All we need to do to defeat him is get him to 38 or 39. He doesn't have to go to zero. He just has to – you can't get reelected with 38% approval.
Absolutely. Very interesting. Well, there's going to be a lot to wait for next week, that's for sure. So the assignment is to listen in. And if you don't get a chance to hear the entire testimony, I guess the news, and then probably YouTube, where you could probably see it all, the 5 hours repeated during the evening while you're eating, chowing down or whatever. Very, very interesting. Well, what a pleasure. I hope you – did you also go through a sweltering time in Florida? Because we went through the ringer up here.
Now, Florida's hot anyway, but you were 10 degrees hotter than we were the last couple of days. Not today.
That's
amazing.
Because
you cooled down.
Yeah.
But yesterday, it was, you had 110, and we had 100 as the real feel heat. I played golf yesterday.
Wow.
It was actually pleasant.
That's amazing that you could do all that. Well, I guess the idea is to you know, if I last another 4 years, maybe I'll be able to also golf. So that'll be very interesting. We'll see. Well, listen, anyway, thanks so much as always. Enjoy the week.
You're welcome.
Stay well and stay healthy. Be good.
See you next week.
Bye.
Yep.
Thank you. Well, it doesn't get better than Michael Edelman, that's for sure, not for me. And it's so exciting. It's always compelling to hear people talk about Michael Edelman, because some are for him, some are against him, but they just can't handle the opinions, and I don't understand that. You know, you'd think that the whole world caved in somehow, but it really doesn't. Well, let's cover some international news as well, because I think that'll be important for us to cover. Bear with me one moment here as I want to move on to some issues. Well, one of the biggest concerns is Britain's calling for an emergency meeting to weigh its response to Iran's tanker seizure. It seems that Prime Minister Theresa May will hold a meeting of Britain's Emergencies Committee today to discuss Iran's seizure of a UK-flagged oil tanker in the Gulf. So in one of her final important acts as Prime Minister before resigning on Wednesday, no less, May will chair a meeting of Britain's COBR Emergencies Committee at around 10:30 local time, her Downing Street office had said. So she's probably engaged in that meeting now. As well as receiving the latest updates from ministers and officials, the COBR meeting will discuss the maintenance of the security of shipping in the Persian Gulf, a spokeswoman said in a brief statement. So it will be Britain's third emergency committee meeting since Iran seized the Stena Impero tanker on Friday, in what London has told the United Nations Security Council was an illegal move conducted in Omani waters. Omani refers to the nation of Oman. So the meeting will be the first May has chaired on the seizure. Cabinet office briefing rooms, the COBR, meetings typically bring together ministers, security, intelligence, and military chiefs in a secure facility in central London. Now, Britain has a frigate, the HMS Montrose, in the Gulf and has requested all British flagged ships to avoid the Strait of Hormuz checkpoint until further notice. Well, in its letter to the United Nations Security Council, Britain said that Iran had claimed that the Swedish-owned Stena Impero had tried to enter the strait through the exit route while not responding to messages or warnings and with its transponder switched off. This is not the case, the letter said. Iranian officials have also claimed that the tanker was detained due to a collision with an Iranian fishing boat, the letter said, adding, quote, there is no evidence of this. Even if it had occurred, the ship's location within Omani territorial waters means that Iran would not have been permitted to intercept the Stena Impero. Junior Defense Minister Tobias Elwood said on Sunday that Britain was considering several options. And asked if Britain could introduce new sanctions or freeze Iranian assets, Finance Minister Philip Hammond told BBC television, we've already got a wide raft of sanctions against Iran, particularly financial sanctions, so it's not clear that there are immediate things we can do, but we are, of course, looking at all the options. Now, Foreign Secretary Jeremy Hunt has said that Parliament will be updated on the situation also on Monday, and either Hunt or former London Mayor Boris Johnson will be confirmed as the new leader of the governing Conservative Party on Tuesday, that's tomorrow, and take over for May as Prime Minister on Wednesday. This is very, very fluid, to say the least, so it's going to be very, very compelling to find out where it goes. Now let's go over to Ukraine. Ukraine's President Zelensky is on course for absolute rule or majority rule in Parliament. It seems that Britain's, comedian-turned-president Volodymyr Zelensky is said to control an absolute majority in Parliament, ushering in a generational shift in the ex-Soviet country's political arena. The 41-year-old became Ukraine's youngest ever post-Soviet leader when he took office 2 months ago and has promised to stamp out corruption and end a separatist war. His newly created Servant of the People Party, named after a sitcom in which he played a president, took around 42% of the weekend vote with 50% of votes counted. And media projections on Monday showed this puts the party on track to pick up more than half of the parliament's 450 seats, the best showing by any party in Ukraine's post-1991 history. So the result is the culmination of stunning turnaround in Ukrainian politics and will bring a host of newcomers into parliament and government. One of the many young and politically inexperienced future lawmakers that will enter parliament is Zan Beleniuk, a 28-year-old Olympic wrestler with Rwandan roots, from Rwanda no less. Four other parties, including one openly supported by the Kremlin, passed the 5% threshold to enter the assembly. The results showed a 49.8% the turnout was the lowest of any election in Ukraine's post-independence history. It was initially thought that Zelensky would have to form a coalition. The president had indicated a preference for another new political force, the Golos, or Voice, party of rock star Sviatoslav Vakurchuk. And the singer's party, also packed with young professionals like Zelensky, made it to parliament with 6% of the vote, according to the latest results. A servant of the People Party chief, Dmitry Razumkov, said on Monday that the party was, quote, open for dialogue, end quote, with forces that share a similar, quote, basic vision for our country, end quote. Speaking shortly after exit polls were released Sunday, Zelensky said his primary goals were to bring peace and tackle corruption. Our main priorities, he said, and I repeat this for every Ukrainian, are to end the war, return our prisoners, and defeat the corruption that persists in Ukraine, he said, in his party's election headquarters. He also said he was looking for a, quote, new face with a specialist in the economy to become the next prime minister. Now, Ukraine's new government will face a long list of challenges in a country heavily dependent on foreign aid and scarred by years of war with Russia-backed separatists. The conflict has killed 13,000 people in 5 years. After more than a decade's absence, an ally of Russian President Vladimir Putin, Viktor Medvedchuk, will return to the Ukrainian parliament. His pro-Moscow party opposition Platform for Life came second in a vote with 12.8%. The Russian leader is godfather to Medvedchuk's daughter. Well, Medvedchuk told Agence France Press that peace in eastern Ukraine could only happen, quote, if with Russia's help, end quote, and that restoring relations with Moscow is, quote, vital, end quote, for Kiev. So former President Petro Poroshenko's European Solidarity Party and former Prime Minister Yulia Tymoshenko's party, Batkivshnia, or Fatherland, also entered parliament with 8.6 and 8% of the vote, respectively, results showed. Analyst Anatoly Yushchuk said that while it may appear that all power is in Zelensky's or Zelensky's hands, he faces a tough opposition from both Poroshenko and Medvedchuk. He will be in a difficult situation. They will create serious problems for him, he said. The comedian's victory in April was seen as a rejection of the country's traditional elite for failing to end the separatist conflict, revive the economy, or tackle widespread corruption. Faced with a hostile parliament after his win, Zelensky quickly called a snap election and vowed to bring in a new generation of politicians to lead the country. And 26 seats in Ukraine's parliament, Verkhovna Rada, will be left empty as they represent Crimea annexed by Russia or territories controlled by separatists. Sporadic fighting continues along the front lines, with four Ukrainian soldiers killed by sniper fire and mine blasts since Friday. So very, very compelling story, very discouraging as well. Well, something else is happening on the world scene. Firefighters battle a massive wildfires in Portugal. About 1,800 firefighters were struggling to contain wildfires in central Portugal that have already injured 20 people, including eight firefighters, authorities said on Sunday. The fire broke out Saturday across three fronts in the district of Castelo Branco, about 125 miles northeast of Lisbon, the capital, Portugal's civil protection agency said. Firefighters were being supported by 19 firefighting aircraft and hundreds of vehicles. It's the first major bout of wildfires in Portugal this year. Interior Minister Eduardo Cabrita gave the injury toll on Sunday and said authorities were investigating the cause of the blazes. State broadcaster RTP televised images of flames consuming wooded areas of the rural region that has seen recurrent wildfires in Portugal's hot, dry summer months. RTP showed firefighters hosing down a line of advancing flames as they rapidly approached houses in the village of Sanadas, while desperate residents looked on and water dumping aircraft swooped overhead. While most of the injured were from smoke inhalation, one person was evacuated to a hospital to be treated for burns, according to health authorities. At least one road was closed, and several residents were told to leave their homes. The Portuguese army deployed a mobile kitchen to help feed those affected by the fire and was using its tracked vehicles to help clear roads for firefighting crews. In recent years, the country has witnessed some of its deadliest fires on record, with 106 people killed in 2017. That year's death toll prompted the Portuguese government to back stronger firefighting prevention measures, leading to no wildfire deaths in 2018. So very, very compelling. So bear with me a moment. Let me just check something here. Bear with me a second. One moment here. Okay, we just got this in. Evidently, the Westchester Democratic leadership endorsed Sean Patterson Howard for mayor of Mount Vernon. So in a show of strength, that belied the political infighting currently plaguing Mount Vernon. On Saturday, July 20th, the city, state, and federal Democratic leadership came together to endorse Sean Patterson Howard, the certified Democratic nominee for the Mount Vernon mayoral race. So that's something to consider. That's what's happening here on the local level. We'll write about that later on. So that'll be posted as well. And then I want you to move on to some other issues. Bear with me a moment. And that's what's going on in Puerto Rico. Evidently, the Puerto Rico governor won't seek re-election, but he refuses to quit amid protests. It seems that Puerto Rico governor Ricardo Rosello said on Sunday evening that he will not resign in the face of public furor over an obscenity-laced leaked online chat that he will not seek re-election or continue as head of the pro-statehood political party. protesters said they were not satisfied by Roselló's concessions and pledged to continue demonstrations that have filled the streets of Old San Juan for more than a week. He's stretching things out. We had hoped he'd taken the decision to resign. He's making the people's pain last longer, said Emmarie Morales, a protester from southeast coastal town of Patillas. She said the governor's decision would not end the protests. He's given us more strength to protest. We aren't going to be around to sit around watching Netflix. In a brief video posted on Facebook, Roselló also said he looked forward to defending himself against the process of impeachment, whose initial stages are being explored by Puerto Rico's legislature. In spite of everything, I recognize that apologizing isn't enough, that only my work will help restore confidence, the governor said. Facing that scenario, I announced to you that I will not seek re-election next year. So the 889 pages of chat on the encrypted app Telegram between the governor and 11 close allies and members of his administration, all men, showed the governor and his close advisors insulting women and mocking constituents, including the victims of Hurricane Maria. Since the chat leaked July 13, hundreds of thousands of outraged Puerto Ricans have marched to Roselló's official residence in the largest protest movement on the island since Puerto Ricans successfully demonstrated to demand an end to U.S. Navy military training on the island of Vieques more than 15 years ago. Puerto Rico's Justice Secretary Wanda Vasquez would assume the governor's role under the territorial constitution's line of succession if Roselló should quit. The upheaval comes as the U.S. territory is struggling to recover from Hurricane Maria and trying to restructure part of a $70 billion debt amid a 13-year concession in this territory. More than 3 million American citizens who do not have full representation in Congress or a vote for president. Today, I have a great responsibility to direct my efforts and those of my administration to keep searching the ways and means for us, united under God, to be able to keep guiding our island, the governor said. On Monday morning, tens of thousands of Puerto Ricans were expected to take over one of the island's main highways to demand Roselló's resignation as legislators considered whether to take the first steps of the impeachment process. Arriving late Sunday to prepare for Monday's march on Nicole Quintana, a 32-year-old dentist, along with her husband and their three-month-old son. We had to do it for him, she said, gesturing to her son. She said they drove about 2 hours from the coastal town of Isabela to participate. Finally, people have said enough is enough. This ends here. A pressure on Roselló to step down has grown throughout the week as the chorus calling for his resignation grew to include Puerto Rico music superstars Ricky Martin, Bad Bunny, and Residente, and a string of U.S. politicians, including Congress members from both parties, several Democratic presidential candidates, and Puerto Rico's non-voting representative in Congress. Roselló was elected governor in November 2016 with nearly 50% of the vote, and he had already announced his intention to seek a second term. A graduate of MIT with a doctorate in genetics, he is the son of former Puerto Rico President Pedro Roselló, who flew to the island to marshal support after the chat was made public. The governor belongs to the New Progressive Party, which seeks statehood for the island, and he is also a Democrat. Most of his time has been spent seeking federal funds since Hurricane Maria devastated the island on September 20, 2017, and battling austerity measures implemented by a federal control board that Congress set up to oversee the island government's finances. The upheaval against Roselló prompted at least four cruise ships to cancel visits to Puerto Rico, and many officials worry about the impact of resignation would have on the already fragile economy as the island rebuilds from Maria, a Category 4 storm that caused more than estimated $100 billion in damage. Another concern is the recent string of arrests involving federal corruption charges targeting Puerto Rico's officials, among them two former agency heads, including former Education Secretary Julia Kelleher. So, very, very interesting story, to say the least. Now, we have a few other issues. Evidently, the dangerous heat wave has gripped the eastern United States. Seems the East Coast on Sunday sweated through another day of heat and humidity in a stretch of weather so oppressive that a New Jersey drawbridge got stuck. And police departments from New York City to suburban Boston implored residents to take it easy. Sunday has been canceled, the NYPD jokingly tweeted. Stay indoors, nothing to see here, really, we got this. The central part of the country, meanwhile, enjoyed some relief as a cold front moved steadily southward and eastward across the country, bringing down the temperatures. But the cooler weather settling in Monday and Tuesday will also bring severe storms and heavy rain that could cause flash flooding and produce damaging winds, the National Weather Service warned. And the Carolinas up to Maine were expected to see the highest temperatures on Sunday. Daytime highs were expected in the mid to upper 90s, which coupled by high humidity could feel as hot as 110 degrees Fahrenheit. Jack Ogden was among the steady stream of tourists milling around outside the White House on Sunday. Undeterred by the stifling heat, the resident of the Netherlands joked that he'd lost about 22 pounds from sweating after just one day of sightseeing. Now, the weather has been ridiculously hot. Washington, D.C. bus driver Ramika Darby remarked while taking a quick break amid temperatures of nearly 100 degrees. There's no point being out, she said. So, in New York City, where all eyes were on the power grid, even before the hot weather following the Manhattan blackout last weekend, the electricity company Con Edison scattered outages on Sunday, the vast majority in the borough of Queens. City also directed office buildings to set thermostats no lower than 78 degrees through Sunday to reduce strain on its electrical grid. A commemoration of the 1969 moon landing plan for Times Square and an outdoor festival featuring soccer star Megan Rapinoe and musician John Legend were also nixed due to the heat on Saturday. In Boston, city officials again opened up city pools free to residents as the temperatures inched past 90 degrees for the third consecutive day by noon Sunday. Police in one suburb also posted a tongue-in-cheek request on their Facebook page, quote, due to the extreme heat, we're asking anyone thinking of doing criminal activity to hold off until Monday, Braintree Police wrote Friday. And continuing, they say, conducting criminal activity in this extreme heat is next-level henchman status and also very dangerous. So in Philadelphia, several hundred people were evacuated from a retirement community on Saturday because of a partial power outage that officials say may have been heat-related. Elsewhere in Pennsylvania, 9 firefighters were treated for heat exhaustion and 6 transported to a hospital for treatment while fighting a house fire in sweltering conditions. The Strinestown Fire Company said all of the firefighters were released by the time Saturday's Conewago Township blaze was extinguished. In New Hampshire, rescue crews helped a 29-year-old hiker late on Saturday after he was overcome by the heat in the White Mountain National Forest. In New Jersey, the Oceanic Bridge over the Navesink River was closed on Saturday evening after it got stuck open. County officials say heat caused expansion of the metal encasing the drawbridge, which is a popular route for residents and beachgoers. The heat even prompted Delaware officials to close Fort Delaware State Park, which served as a Union prison camp during the Civil War. Temperatures were simply too high for costumed interpreters to wear wool garbs this weekend, officials said. The National Weather Service reported high temperatures for July 20 were recorded Saturday at its weather stations in Atlantic City, New Jersey, New York City, Westfield, Massachusetts, Manchester, New Hampshire, and Wallops Island in Virginia. Now, the heat relented early Sunday in the northern reaches of New England. A Canadian cold front brought thunderstorms Saturday evening that dropped temperatures across northern Vermont and upstate New York. A heat advisory remained in effect for southern sections of Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine, however. In many parts of the country, it's not expected to get much better when the sun goes down. Temperatures are expected to remain at or above the high 70s overnight, and experts warn residents in affected areas to limit their time outdoors. The risks are greatest for young children, the elderly, and the sick. Meanwhile, strong and wind and rain were expected to persist in the Midwest, bringing the potential for heavy rainfall and flash flooding. And storms already knocked out power to hundreds of thousands of residents in Michigan and Wisconsin on Saturday. So unbelievable sort of stuff that's going on. This was unexpected, and I had not known why, but evidently British Airways and Lufthansa have suspended Cairo flights due to safety concerns. So British Airways and Lufthansa abruptly suspended flights to Cairo from Saturday over security concerns, but giving no detail about what may have prompted the move. We constantly review our security arrangements at all our airports around the world and have suspended flights to Cairo for 7 days as a precaution to allow for further assessment, British Airways said in a statement. Lufthansa later said it had canceled its flights to Cairo on Saturday from Munich and Frankfurt and will resume its flights on Sunday. Now, British Airways, a unit of IAG, also said that it would never operate an aircraft unless it was safe to do so. When asked for more details about why flights had been suspended and what security arrangements the airline was reviewing, a spokeswoman responded, "We never discuss matters of security." Three Egyptian airport security sources told Reuters that the British staff had been checking security at Cairo Airport on Wednesday and Thursday. They gave no further details. The British Foreign Office updated its travel advisory on Saturday to add a reference to the British Airways suspension, advising travelers affected to contact the airline. Egypt's Minister of Civil Aviation said in a statement late on Saturday that it had contacted the British Embassy in Cairo, which had confirmed that the decision to suspend the flights was not issued by Britain's transport or foreign ministries. The Egyptian ministry added that it will add more flights from Cairo to London starting on Sunday to facilitate transporting passengers during this period. British government has long advised against all but essential travel by air to and from the Egyptian resort of Sharm el-Sheikh, where a Russian passenger jet was bombed in 2015, but has not issued similar warnings against air travel to and from Cairo. There's a heightened risk of terrorism against aviation. Additional security measures are in place for flights departing from Egypt to the United Kingdom, the British advisory had advised. So, tourism, a key source of foreign revenue for Egypt, has been recovering after tourist numbers dropped in the wake of a 2011 uprising and the 2015 bombing of the Russian jet, which killed all 224 people on board shortly after takeoff. And that was Sharm el-Sheikh. And that attack, which was claimed by the Islamic State, prompted Russia to hold all flights to Egypt for several years in a number of countries, including Britain, to cease flights to Sharm el-Sheikh, which have yet to resume. So that's the big issue there. And let's just move on to some other concerns. This is quite important as well. Evidently, armed mobs attack Hong Kong after the night protest. So Hong Kong's opposition Democratic Party is investigating attacks by suspected triad gangsters on train passengers on Sunday after a night of violence opened new fronts in the political crisis now deepening across the city. So screams rang out when men, clad in white T-shirts and some armed with poles, flooded into the rural Yuanlong station and stormed a train, attacking passengers, according to footage taken by commuters and Democratic Party lawmaker Lam Chuk-ting. Now, some passengers had been at an earlier anti-government march, and the attack came after several thousand activists surrounded China's representative office in the city, later clashing with police. Lam, who was injured in the attack, said he was angry about a slow police response after he alerted them to the trouble, government-funded broadcaster RTHK reported. So Lam said that the police action had failed to protect the public, allowing the triads to run rampant. The party is now investigating. Is Hong Kong now allowing triads to do what they want, beating up children, beating up people on the street with weapons? He asked reporters. Hong Kong has been rocked by a series of sometimes violent protests for more than 2 months in its most serious crisis since Britain handed the freewheeling city back to Chinese rule in 1997. Protesters are demanding the full withdrawal of a bill to allow people to be extradited to mainland China for trial, where the courts are controlled by the Communist Party, and independent inquiries into the use of police force against protesters. So on Sunday, police fired rubber bullets and tear gas to disperse crowds of activists in the edge of Hong Kong's glittering financial district after they had fled China's liaison office. And the Chinese government has condemned the action, which saw signs and a state symbol daubed with graffiti. Continuing upset and unrest in Hong Kong marks the greatest popular challenge to Chinese leader Xi Jinping since he came to power in 2012. The Homeland Security said that 45 people were injured in a Yuanlong attack, and with one in a critical condition. Some 13 people were injured after the clashes in Hong Kong Island, one seriously, authorities said. My God. So in a statement early on Monday, that's today, police strongly condemned both violent incidents and were investigating both cases. Some police have been injured in the clashes after protesters hurled bricks, smoke grenades, and gasoline bombs, the statement had said. So very, very frightening set of circumstances that have taken place, that's for sure. Now, I guess that's about it. That's our day. It's 11:30 or so now. Let me quickly look to see what's happening tomorrow. Tomorrow, we're going to speak to Robert Keston. That's going to be very, very interesting, and that'll be a lot of fun. So we hope you'll enjoy today. And it gets a little bit cooler, which it seems to have to have become. And but at the end of the week, we're going to go back to the heat. So enjoy it while you can, and be careful as well. So let me go back to our studio screen where we are here. So we wish you a good day, and thank you for being with us. Goodbye.